Hour number two, Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5, The Game. Presented by Curation CBD. Curation CBD, CBD products curated for life. Chase McCabe, Willie Donick. D-Mac had to step away for just a little bit as Willie is up in the Big Apple. Let's head down to Jacksonville. Say hello to our buddy Tony Smith from 1010XL in Jacksonville. Tony, how you doing? Tony, do we have you? Okay, we'll try and get Tony back. I don't know what happened.
Okay.
False start. False start.
On the offense.
Five yard penalty.
Repeat first down.
But yeah, curious to hear kind of how things are going there in Jacksonville, because we talked to Tony back the first time that the Titans and the Jags played, but that was also around, you know, Urban Meyer's deal and his little extracurriculars in Ohio. And so I'm curious to see how things have settled down and look at things from more of a football standpoint, because, you know, we talked about it yesterday, Willie, that the rookie year for Trevor Lawrence has been very much a welcome to the NFL year for him, even though I still think that, you know, there's hope if they can build the right team around him.
Well, you would have to hope that there's still hope. He's had a rough go. I'm really curious. We've had Tony on a bunch. I think he'll give us a good straight shot of where he thinks the issues lie, because I do think it's easy from afar to say there's just not much there around him. Troy Aikman is one of the classics that talks about his first year in the league where they were horrible. They were 1-15,
right?
And he got pulverized, but he lived to tell about it and got better. There's other
Peyton Manning threw 28 picks his rookie year. I think we have Tony back.
Yeah, so Peyton Manning had a ton of success relative to Troy Aikman his first year, even though the picks are well documented. There's a lot of pathways to success.
No doubt. Tony, how you doing?
Doing well, guys. Sorry about that. Glad we got reconnected here.
No worries. So offensive coordinator Darrell Bevell said, quote, "We're a work in progress," yesterday. And last time we talked to you, I think it was more about Urban Meyer and his little trip up to Ohio. But when you watch this team now, Trevor Lawrence mainly, because he's obviously the franchise quarterback that they selected first overall, where do you think they are in this process?
I think they are a team that has no identity at this point. And I think to a large degree, that's because they haven't been able to identify their own talent that's within the building. And speaking directly to that would be running back James Robinson. But they don't have a bunch of guys that they have nobody that's going to outrun anybody in their wide receiver group. They just don't have that. So they're limited in what they can do downfield in this Jaguars offense. Trevor Lawrence is a rookie who we've seen the last 3 weeks has gone backwards, it feels like. That doesn't mean he can't take another step forward here in the last 5 weeks, but it does feel like he's gone backwards. And that is directly correlated with them not using James Robinson, even when he's healthy enough to play. It's been a weird couple of weeks with the way that they've used Robinson here in the offense, and it's a team that needs some kind of threat of the run, just a threat of the run to do any of the play action, any of the rollout stuff that they want to do with Trevor Lawrence, but they haven't gotten anything going with the way that they've used the backs in the games the last 3-4 weeks, and so everything is going backwards right now in this Jaguars offense. They've lost some key pieces, obviously, in the passing game, but yeah, at this point, it's 5 weeks. We all knew this season was going to be about the evaluation of Trevor Lawrence, and the last few weeks have not been good at all in that regard. So hopefully here in the last 5 weeks, he gives something for everyone to feel better about going into the offseason, because he's clearly going to be the guy here in Jacksonville, and they got to surround him with more pieces. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, I mean, that was going to be my next question, because I look at the guys he's throwing to right now: Tavon Austin, Marvin Jones, Jaden Mickens, Laviska Shenault, Laquan Treadwell. Obviously, not having Shark, who is on IR, that hurts. But to me, it's all about weapons and putting him in a position to succeed.
Yeah, and they just don't have any. And I don't know what this offense would look like if DJ Chark had stayed healthy all year. You know, we'll never know the answer to that and how much he would help everything else that was going on. But they lose DJ Chark. It looked like a guy like Jamal Agnew, who they brought in to be a special teams ace for them, had a 109-yard field goal kick return earlier this year. So he was giving them that, but he was developing into one of their more dependable offensive weapons with the speed that he had in the offense. Well, they lost him a few weeks ago, too. Laviska Shenault has not taken that step up from year one to year two that everyone was expecting here in town. Marvin Jones has disappeared really in the last couple of weeks. He's a veteran guy, and they haven't gotten, I think, what they expected to get out of Marvin Jones ultimately this year, but he's not a downfield game-breaking type guy. He's not a speed guy. They don't have anybody on the field that can stretch or scare a defense in the passing game. So they're really limited in what they can do week to week. They lost Dan Arnold at tight end, who they traded for earlier this season. It's a mess right now offensively, where going into games, expecting the Jaguars to score two touchdowns in a week feels like a high expectation right now with what they have going on offense.
Talking to Tony Smith, 1010XL down in Jacksonville. Tony, I try to put myself in the shoes of an offensive coordinator when you have all of these issues that you laid out, and you're trying to protect the asset. You're trying to move Trevor Lawrence forward. Like you said, you just love to, at the end of the season, feel like, you know, the arrow is pointed in the right direction here. But that's got to be a tough dilemma, because what do you do?
Yeah, we had a whole show this week where that was the idea. We just put it out for fans. What would you do? What is your one idea, you know, this week on offense to try to get this thing going? And the only thing I could come up with, given how much they want to run play action, they're running play action when they got no run game going. They're running half rollouts when they got no run game going in this Jaguars offense, which makes no sense. Nobody's going to respect any of that. The only opportunity they have to be productive on offense is to get James Robinson going in a given week, and they haven't even really tried to do that in the last 3 weeks with James. Granted, he's dealing with an injury, but he's healthy enough to play him. So that's the only idea I have, is to try early on in the game to get James Robinson established so that you can run some of the other stuff that you want and try to make something look easy for them in the pass game, because right now everything is really difficult when they try to throw the ball right now.
You just touched on where I wanted to ask you, you know, for added perspective, because James Robinson, you know, if you're a fantasy owner, all you see is the Q next to his name. You know, he's limited in practice.
Yeah.
But I have wondered, because all Titans fans will remember the first meeting, he had a great game, and it had Jacksonville right in that game in the second half before the big goal line stand. But when he drops off, there's no question it's a totally different offense there. So what is the injury and like you said, you're kind of hinting that they should play him more and give him more carries, but he clearly has not been the same for several weeks.
No, he hasn't been, but he's been healthy enough to play. It's been weird the way that they've treated the James Robinson situation. He's been benched the last 2 weeks. 2 weeks ago, he fumbled the ball for the first time in his career, by the way. Lost the fumble 2 weeks ago and was pulled off the field for 16 plays. Last week, he fumbled the ball in the first quarter on the first drive, and he was pulled off the field, didn't get another carry until the third quarter of the football game last week. So there's been a bunch of questions about what they're doing with James Robinson at this point. He's dealing with a heel bruise that he suffered in the Seattle game a while ago. He's also, they list the knee on the injury report, not exactly sure what that injury is, but it hasn't been enough to keep him off the field this season. He's been healthy enough to go in the last couple of weeks. They just haven't used him, and they've pulled him in weird circumstances the last couple of weeks, where he has had these extended periods where he's been off the field after a fumble. While Carlos Hyde fumbles last week, he's off the field for a play, and they get him back out there. James Robinson, who is right now their best player on offense, has a fumble, and he's off the field for two quarters. It just doesn't make sense, some of the decisions that they've been making with James Robinson. No, he's not 100% healthy, but he's still a guy that it was giving them 2 weeks ago playing on the injured heel and the injured knee was giving them 4.5 yards a carry. They don't have anyone else in this offense that can give them that. They have to have it to have any chance to be competent in a given week offensively, and that they haven't committed to trying to get that going week to week. It's been a real mystery, I would be surprised, given everything that's happened this week in Jacksonville, if James Robinson is not the focal point of this Jaguars offense this week heading up to Nashville.
Tony Smith is with us, 1010XL. Looking at things from the defensive side, you got a handful of players that each have a pick. They're losing the turnover battle in total. What are you seeing defensively, and what needs to change for them to try and help out the offense by making some big plays?
Yeah, they had a stretch there, including the Buffalo win. They won that game 9-6, where it felt like early on in the season, going through the offseason and training camp, Joe Cullen, who was a first-time defensive coordinator, he's been a defensive coach in the league for a long time, though. This is his first shot as a DC. And about halfway through the year, he was looking at the personnel they had, different things that they were dealing with, and they wanted to run a bunch of man coverage early on in the season, and they changed their mind. Like, he just midstream said, you know what, we don't have the guys that we need to be able to do that. So they went to more of a zone scheme, a more zone blitz scheme, doing those kind of things, and it worked. And for 3 weeks, the Jaguars, from a scoring perspective, were one of the better defenses in the National Football League and were getting after opposing passers, doing different things. The last couple of weeks haven't been as good, right? The Atlanta game, Cordarrelle Patterson gets a couple rushing touchdowns, and the rush defense had been pretty good through the first half of the season. San Francisco beat them with Deebo Samuel. Last week against L.A. was just a disaster. All over the field. They didn't get pressure. They didn't stop anybody's run. I mean, Sony Michel's running for 100 yards against them. So they're trying to get back to what they were not all that long ago to refine those answers, because this was a team that, at least going into games week to week, you knew, if nothing else, they were going to do a really good job against the run. The last 3 weeks, they haven't done that, and now they're facing a Tennessee team that we all know, even without Derrick Henry, that the plan's going to be to run the football for the Tennessee Titans. So if they can't get that reworked out going into this game this weekend, they're really not going to give themselves much of a chance. But if they play the way they have most of the season, then they're going to give themselves a chance with the way that they can stop the run.
I know there's still a handful of games left, but if you're doing an overall evaluation of Urban Meyer as a head coach in the NFL in his first year, with what we've been talking about and the weapons, the roster, the way it looks, how would you evaluate him?
Failure. I mean, it's been no good this year. They've only won two games, and with all the off-the-field stuff that obviously everyone has talked about over and over and over again, and between that and we're talking about going in the last 5 weeks and looking for something to feel good about with Trevor Lawrence going into this offseason, look, my confidence has not been shaken in Trevor Lawrence as the quarterback for this football team. I do have a shaky at best confidence that Urban Meyer is going to be able to take the reins of this thing and get them going in the right direction from a franchise standpoint. This week, several times, Urban Meyer, when speaking to the media, and the James Robinson stuff was what most people were talking about, and the benching, was it a benching, all these different kinds of things, and he didn't even have answers. You know, his best offensive player is off the field for two quarters of the football game last week. Was he benched? I don't know. You'll have to ask the running backs coach. That was the head coach's answer to that question. You'll have to ask the running backs coach about what's going on with it. I mean, it's just the organization that we thought that Urban Meyer would be bringing. He said yesterday that one of the media guys here, and a bunch of the guys here covered him when he was at Florida with the Gators, and asked him a question along the lines of, what made you great when you were in college is you were such a micromanager. Nothing was beyond your purview, right? And this is a guy who just told us he doesn't know about what's going on with his best player, whether or not he's on the field. So they ask, you know, what is going on with the micromanaging thing? Is that something that you just left in your past? And Urban Meyer said, yeah, I reevaluated myself for the last couple of years at Ohio State, decided not to be that guy anymore. Well, that guy is the guy that the Jaguars hired because he won three national championships and was maniacal about getting everything that he could out of everybody in those spots that he was at with Florida and Ohio State and Utah and all that success. It feels more and more like that guy's not going to walk into the building here in Jacksonville. I have no idea what's going to happen going into next year at this point, but do I have a whole lot of hope that they're going to figure it out over the last five games of this season? No. Not with what he's been saying, especially this week.
You kind of answered a question, but I was surprised when, you know, you had USC open up and Notre Dame that at one point, you know, sure, he called a dream job open up. And every time he was asked about it, it was, nah, I'm done with college. Like, I'm enjoying, you know, I'm in the NFL now. You know, how surprised were you that there wasn't more to that, that and that he ended up not taking any of those? And the reason I'm asking you this is because you kind of alluded to that he's not being the micromanager guy anymore, which he would have had to be if he goes to a USC or Notre Dame. And it kind of feels like he likes the easier life in the NFL.
Yeah, I think that if he's not going to be the coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars going forward, that he'll be a TV analyst. It would be my guess that all the college coaching jobs that were, you know, at least connected to him. We've heard rumors that USC might have reached out to at least gauge whether he had any interest, but I don't know if that's true or not. I'd be stunned if Notre Dame actually reached out to Urban Meyer, given the story this during the season with him with that girl in the bar. I'd be stunned if Notre Dame had any interest in Urban Meyer, given that story. But yeah, I think if he's not going to be an NFL coach, I don't think it'll be going back to coach in the college ranks, that he'd just go back to a TV studio job and be happy doing it. And look, if the Jaguars don't get a guy who's willing to step more into a controlling role to run this thing, I mean, a head coach stepping to a podium and saying, I don't know what's going on with his best player on offense, I've as much dysfunction as there's been in Jacksonville in the time that I've covered this team, I've never seen a head coach do that. Never. I've never even heard of a head coach completely sidestepping that kind of question when it's involving your best player on offense. So, look, I don't know how long Urban Meyer is for Jacksonville, but I don't think he's going to be coaching anywhere else either. If he steps away, it'll be to go back to the broadcast booth, would be my guess.
So real quick, would Shad Khan make a move after 1 year?
I don't know. Really? I mean, Shad Khan said last year that they finally got it right when they brought in Urban Meyer, but I can't believe that Urban Meyer, that Shad Khan hired the guy that they have right now, right? I would have to believe that Shad Khan thought they were getting the guy that was going to be hands on everything, right? Like, nothing was beyond his purview, as opposed to what they're dealing with right now in Jacksonville. I don't know if that would be enough for him to move on. I have no idea what the contract is that he actually signed when he got here to Jacksonville. That's never been reported. So I don't know what the money is from that side of things either. But Shad Khan said last year during the offseason, we finally got it right. It would be hard to imagine that he's going to move on from that after a year. I wouldn't blame him if he did, though, with the way that this season is playing out.
Interesting stuff. Tony, always enjoy the chats with you. Thanks for doing it. We'll talk again soon.
Thanks, guys.
Tony Smith, 1010XL in Jacksonville, the next opponent for the Tennessee Titans. Willie, interesting stuff on Urban Meyer that we'll discuss when we come back here on Darren Donick and Chase. But first, you have a word about QC Kinetics.
Okay, let me give you the word about QC Kinetics. QC Kinetics, of course, is new to our area, and I've been trying to introduce them to you for a while, especially if you're one of those people that as you're getting older, you've got that nagging joint pain, hip pain, knee, shoulder, back. There could be something ailing you that you've tried a lot of different things. Maybe you've tried steroids. Maybe you've tried surgery. Maybe you've been told maybe it's time to get a surgery. Well, this is another option that you need to consider. QC Kinetics, non-surgical regenerative treatments for joint pain. We're talking lasting results using natural biologics, no surgery, no pain meds, no steroids, and it's going to get you active for 2022. So if you've been sort of on the shelf, maybe the pandemic, everything kind of, you've let yourself go a little bit, get yourself moving again for 2022, and don't let the joint pain hold you back. Consider this option by calling QC Kinetics at 615-249-4024. Get that second opinion and be on your way. These are regenerative, restorative treatments that actually encourage your body to heal itself. It uses these highly concentrated natural biologics. It's QC Kinetics, 615-249-4024. That's 615-249-4024 for QC Kinetics.
Titans hosting the Jags at Nissan Stadium. If you're looking for a place to hang Sunday morning, starting at 9:30, our NFL pregame show will be at Boombaugh's Craft Pizza and Tap House in East Nashville. If you're going to the game, that's a perfect place to go hang and then head on over to Nissan. If you're not going, how about just hang out there and watch? Boombaugh's Craft Pizza Tap House in East Nashville. That's 1003 Russell Street. Okay? Keep that in mind on Sunday. NFL pregame show is brought to you by TriStar Moving, Parman Tractor and Equipment, FreedomTireGuys.com, FanDuel, E2 Roofing, Hillside Medical, Social Furniture, and Screwball Peanut Butter Whiskey. Good stuff there. Talking about the Jags. I love that he used Purview. Yes, I love that. That was, he worked that in. That was good. That didn't sound too promising about O'Herb.
I was a little surprised by how he answered that, if I'm being honest, because I thought, we don't know the contract, you're right, but I kind of thought that it's viewed as a rebuild and you would go at it as a rebuild, and so therefore it would be a foregone conclusion he's going to get more than 1 year. But that did not sound confident that it couldn't be a one-and-done thing.
I don't believe so. I mean, they've invested too much. I can't imagine they're going to pull the plug after a year. I mean, did anybody really expect them to be good this year? No. So,
but it's the incident, though. The incident just hammered his credibility, I think.
Yeah.
Did it, though?
He just has looked – oh, yes.
His credibility. I mean, if you've spent – you've been anybody who knows Urban Meyer, if you talk to the right people, they would have told you he was yucky from get-go. I mean, he didn't just turn yucky. He's been yucky for a long time. How long have I been talking about Urban Meyer away from here? I mean, away from the field, like him as a person. Yuck.
Well,
I mean, I've said it many, many times.
Yeah, maybe Shad Khan should have talked to you then.
Well, you need to talk to me. There's probably a whole long line of people that spent more time around him than me.
That's kind of my point. That's kind of my point, that everybody has known about this, but there's not been a question about his leadership skills as a head coach. But that, I just think, combined with some of the other things that were going on at the time, I think that just shattered his image. That's just my thought. I just think he has no enthusiasm. I think deep down he's embarrassed about what happened there. Like that was some of the you defer to your running back coach about why the running back was taken out. I don't know. That's just not I think Urban Meyer is just in a different phase of life here. I just think he's a different guy.
He's been known to run from stuff before. I mean, so I think this is who he is. If everything is not perfect and he's not being worshipped, I mean, and everything's not going his way, hasn't he shown to have a propensity to pull the ripcord and bounce?
Yeah, I just don't think
that surprise anybody.
Nothing
like that has happened publicly, though. Like what happened there. I just think he's just looked upon so differently. And in the pros, you don't have the cover that he used to have, where he could control press conferences and he was winning so much and the numbers were stacked in his favor. It's just such a different operation. And not only is he trying to win in the NFL, he's trying to win in Jacksonville, where it's been broken for so long. So it does look like a ship that's going down.
Well, there's no doubt that being protected in a college market, you know, like, for example, Gainesville, yeah, there's no doubt these guys have huge amounts of power, right?
People lap up everything you say. In the NFL, correct, they're not lapping up everything you say. They're challenging things that you're saying. Yeah,
but at the same time, you know, Bill Belichick is a CEO. I mean, that's what he is, and he's a control freak. If Urban really wanted to, he would have to earn – I mean, you know, he's got to build up to it. But from what Tony was just saying in the interview, it kind of sounds like he just doesn't care anymore. Like, it honestly comes across to me that he's just collecting a check, and that's
why
what he's doing.
I wonder about the effect that incident had on him, because that just doesn't sound like Urban Meyer to me.
No, I don't think. Hey, look, you can say a lot of things about Urban Meyer, but just collecting a check guy, I don't think that's him.
No, but do you? That doesn't fit. Do you not see from what Tony was just saying, do you not kind of get that vibe too? I mean, I would have said the same thing. Like, he's not that way. He's going to come in. He's going to be a control freak, know everything going on. But if he's saying you'll have to ask the running backs coach and, you know, saying like, nah, you know, I kind of changed my ways and I'm not that guy anymore, that is not Urban Meyer. Like, that's surprising to me that he's even admitting that.
What it sounds like to me is a guy that's realized that he's in way over his head. The NFL does not translate to Urban Meyer.
And maybe he just doesn't have the motor that he had once upon a time in his life, that drive, that crazy. I mean, that's the one thing you would say about him. He was just a machine, a control freak, just maniacal behind the scenes, stacking up things and doing his. I don't know if he has that drive right now. It doesn't appear that he does.
I think you can have that. I think it's easier to have that drive whenever you feel like you're always equipped to do that, right? I think when you look around, it's pretty deflating when you look around and you realize you're not equipped. It's a pretty right. deflating feeling as a coach when you realize, look, it really doesn't matter. Like, we can coach our butts off. It's not going to really, in the grand scheme of things, it's not going to get us to the levels we need to be because we're just not good enough.
Yes, because that is probably the biggest thing that he was able to do at Florida and Ohio State is he stacked his teams. His teams were so talented and layered with talent. He was coaching from a position of strength. In the NFL, it is totally different. Everything is stacked to be even. And he comes in on the bottom where, yeah, he had the first pick. And, you know, down the road, he'll probably have the first pick again. If he sticks it out, he's got a chance to build it. But he hasn't been a coach of a team that's getting their butts kicked most weeks. The entire time he was at college, he went nuts when they lost like four games in a season at Florida. Remember, that's why he stepped away. Mm-hmm. The stress and everything, just losing a handful of games. So this is wearing on him.
Yeah, and we all wondered how he would handle it.
And he knows it. He doesn't have the cards. He doesn't have the horses. He's not been there before.
Yeah, and I know the joke is, and it's a joke because that's probably how it'll end, is, oh, you know, he's not used to losing, so here comes the health issues. Like, he'll have something go wrong and say, oh, I can't do this. I got to step away. But I kind of feel like that, you know, if he gets a second year, which he probably will, then you could, if it doesn't get any better and you see it be like this next year, then yeah, he's doing that again.
It feels like Steve Spurrier. It feels like it's just on a short shelf life. It's going to end sooner rather than later. I don't think it's going to be after this year. I think he's going to attempt to come back and try to right the ship, but I think it won't take long for him to realize, like, I can't fix this. I can't get this mm-hmm. to the level that I need to be, that I'm accustomed to being in college, because you can fix it by going out there and just getting the horses, right? And when you come in and week out and you know you're equipped to beat everybody, you know, it doesn't always mean that's how it's going to play out. But if you're at least equipped to beat everybody, that's a pretty good feeling as a coach. When you're not equipped, it's not. It's right. a horrible feeling. And somebody that's wired like him, you know, it's probably a helpless feeling. But, you know, I mean, who's kidding who? I mean, you weren't going to come into the NFL and have the success that you had in college. I mean, you got to be kidding me. I mean, Who's that example of the, you know, lights out college coach that, you know, just tears it up in the NFL? I mean, I don't know who's that example.
Well, I mean
Nick Saban did
Jimmy Johnson. Jimmy Johnson.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
it's just a different formula. There we can go down the list.
Pete Carroll,
there's a lot of failures.
Pete Carroll,
yeah, there's some. We've gone through this list many times, but it's just such a different thing. Like, you can't go in there and have a big speech every day. Like, I think if you look at some of the stuff he did at Ohio State, you know, these motivational talks, like the behind the scenes when they would have the thing, you know, you're trying to shape your team and you have their undivided attention. Just a different way of pushing people's buttons in the pros.
What's something
you can't do it the same way.
But Darren, what's something that the Dolphins, because you brought up Nick Saban, and so I just want to see what you think about this. What's something the Dolphins and the Jags have in common?
They're viewed as bad organizations.
Correct. So if
bad owners.
So if Saban,
by the way, owners with deep pockets. It's
yes,
not money.
Correct.
Like those two, Ross and Khan, got loads of money.
Khan,
but
I mean,
just not very. It just seems like they. Ross is fascinated with star. You know, he mm-hmm. loves names. He loves being associated with famous people. You know, people down there in the Miami area. He seems to be get distracted. Squirrel, there's a famous person, and
right.
he's thinking about that and how can I get him in my box and they can sit and watch the game with me. They just don't come off as good owners. They've got deep pockets. They just don't come off as they know what the heck they're doing.
Right. So, and neither one of us know the answer to this, but if Saban had worked for a team that was a good organization with good ownership that had things in place to help them succeed, he might have stuck around and he might have been successful. I think he would have.
He had also been in the NFL at one point in
right.
his career. Urban Meyer had not been in the NFL to understand what it's like day to day around an NFL team as opposed to a college team. I just think that the opportunity for Nick Saban to go grab Alabama was just too much for him to pass up. Like, I don't think he was failing miserably as the Dolphins coach. He was, you know, not great, but only.
No, he wasn't failing miserably.
No, but yeah. he saw an opportunity. Thanks to Rich Rod, he saw an opportunity to get out and
right.
go
and
back to
the
college.
Timing was very, very tough. He had to bail, and he knew that wasn't going to go over well. He had to know,
yeah,
but he had to do it.
But yeah, you're right. I mean, that's how he met Floyd, was coaching in the NFL as a DB's coach in Belichick, and he was Belichick's defensive coordinator in Cleveland. So he had that experience. So that's why in. Again, we'll never know the answer, but that's why I bring that up, that if they worked for better organizations and teams that had their stuff together, now Urban, who knows? I mean, maybe. But I think Saban would have stuck around. And, you know, maybe even you say the same thing for Spurrier. Spurrier worked for a bad organization.
I think what the biggest challenge that they come up with is you just and we talk about it all the time, right? The cliche, any given Sunday, that truly is. I mean, just think about it. As much as they're equipped in the SEC, and we talk about Murderers Row in the SEC, the NFL, we talk about SEC West, right? Oh my gosh. Well, guess what? The NFL every single week is the SEC West. Like, you don't ever
yep.
get a break. You never get a break. It's like you're playing against the best in the world every single week. And, yes, there's different levels, but there is no break. You don't get the cupcake game. You don't get cupcake games. Whether you've got a couple teams in the SEC that are way down or, you know, those out-of-conference games where at least three of the four, you can literally just put it in cruise control and, you know, ride yourself to the finish line to an easy, easy win. But you just don't get those weeks off in the NFL. I think that's probably – and there's more weeks, right? It's not a 12-game schedule. It's 17 now, even 16. It's more. I just think it's a huge, huge adjustment. And I don't know. I just think you have to be wired a certain way to pull it off, because I just
right.
think it's probably a big shock to them. I mean, it's – You're not dealing with the same type of players, right? In college, you've got more command of the room, and the NFL is more about being a CEO. It's about just being in charge. It's not about commanding the room. Yes, you have to command the room, but it's a different type of command, right? Right? You're less hands-on. It's just, you know, these are professional athletes. They get a big paycheck. I mean, you just don't have the control over them like you do in college. It's just different. I mean, they're older. They're adults. They're on their own. So I don't know. It's really interesting. I I think he's going to get another year, but I think ultimately what we're going to find out is this isn't going to work.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what we're all going to be able to agree on. It's not going to work. Like, it's going to end sooner rather than
later. Which I kind of think we've thought that going in, but yeah.
There was the real curiosity because he was one of those high-level coaching guys, right? I mean, this is the guy that was in the upper, the top tier of college football coaches, and so there was this level of intrigue, like, okay, this guy has known nothing but success. Can he actually do this at the NFL level? I mean, I think we suspected if we had to lock in a bet, we probably would have said, yeah, he's probably not going to be successful. But it was different than, you know, trying to figure out if Matt Rhule is going to be successful, right? Or Cliff Kingsbury is going to be successful. Because I think Matt Rhule's probably in the same boat. Like, he's like going, do I really want to keep doing this in the NFL or do I want to run back to college? At some point, I suspect Matt Rhule will get there, don't you?
Yeah. No, I think so.
All right. Let's get a word about Lone Pronto. We'll come back and we'll talk about those prop bets that we discussed coming into the season. How do they look like right now?
All right. Let's talk Lone Pronto. Lone Pronto, of course, with the days counting down towards 2022. They want you to get your holiday expenses straight and then head on into the new year on the rise. Home values in our listening area are skyrocketing. That means right now is a great time to take some cash out of your home's equity if you need cash for a number of reasons. It might be to pay off credit cards. It might be some other kind of debts that you need to pay. Maybe some other holiday expenses. Maybe it's something that you've been wanting to do for a while. Make a new kitchen, renovate a bathroom, swimming pool, patio, something that will reinvest in your home and make it even more valuable. Well, here's how you do it. Get the zero-cost refi, the fast-tracked home refi from Loan Pronto. They can pay your closing costs, get you a check for 50, 60, 70 grand or more. It'll be on the fast track for you. Most of their loans close within about 14 days. And then you get to skip your next two house payments. It's a great move. It puts cash in your hand. It's your money that you can put to work for you. And you'll be on your way to financial freedom for 2022. All you have to do is call Loan Pronto and ask about that zero-cost refi. 615-499-5780. That's 615-499-5780 or go to loanpronto.com. Equal housing lender, NMLS 166-1781. Subject to lender approval. Not all loans apply.
Our NFL game of the week this Sunday is San Francisco at Cincinnati to take on the Bengals. That's a 3:25 kickoff, and that game will be aired on ESPN 94.9. That's brought to you by Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue. You just made the list coming up at high noon. Keep that in mind. We've got tickets to give away to Friday Night Smackdown before you can even buy them. That will be on January 21st at Bridgestone Arena. But first, let's talk a little bit about a discussion we had a couple of months ago and how does it look like as we sit here on December the 10th.
Well, before the season started, and we've checked in every quarter of the season since we put these down, at the end of training camp, I asked you guys 10 Titans questions, which I felt like key questions for the season and issues that we had debated a lot during training camp. We had the full training camp. We had the preseason games, a lot of downtime, a lot of anticipation. And we kicked all of these around. So we tried to make some predictions off of it. Prop bets, if you will. All right. So here's what you got. 10 questions. Here was the first one. This will let you know the direction this thing is going and how much has changed every quarter of the season. The first one was Sam Ficken. Would he be the kicker for the Titans the entire year? Yes or no? What do you think the answer was?
I know. I said no.
I said no.
Yes. Now, you guys said no. I said yes. And we know the answer to that. So the kicking saga, it will be interesting to see if Bullock can get back on track after the bye week. You know, he's got a bad taste in his mouth from the last game. He didn't kick very well. And that's been sitting with him festering for a while. So his next kick, I think on Sunday, will be important. He needs to get back on track. Question number two was this. Over or under 79.5 receptions for Julio Jones on the season?
Oh, I was wrong. I said over. I definitely said over. I was wrong.
I can't remember what I said. I think I said.
Chase, you said under, and okay. I said under.
Okay.
Very much.
Because I think I said over for AJ and under for Julio.
Yeah. Well, I did not ask about AJ for mine. I know we kicked around AJ's as well. But I said under. Chase said under. Darren said over. Right now, Julio with 21. So he's got a long way to go to get to 80. So right now, if he got to 40, that might not be too bad of a thing. The next question was Bud Dupree, 10 or more sacks on the season. Darren said no. I said no. Chase, you were optimistic and said yes. Hmm. It just shows you how our way of thinking before the season started, and here we are. And yet they're 8-4. They have a chance to do some special things, but it certainly isn't because of the sack total for Bud Dupree. Although, as people have mentioned a lot, Bud Dupree has had an influence on the defense. When he's been in there, the defense has been better. The next question, over or under 1,550 yards for Derrick Henry? We actually looked up on the actual Vegas prop sites and came up with that number, 1,550.
Yeah.
All of us said over.
And we were going to be right.
And we were, we were totally going to be right. Well, he would have probably already hit that by now.
Yeah. Availability is...
Yeah,
but I know, but
there's no way of.
But yeah, like how would you predict that a guy like him that's never been hurt in his career?
Right, would go, hey, I'm going under because he's going to get hurt like that. I mean, you know.
Yeah, but that's
I get it. We missed
history of the NFL.
Right, I understand. We understand.
I said over. I said over, and I've been the guy for years saying the curse of 370. Guys wear out.
But the three of us were going to be right. We were going to be right. He was definitely going over. Easy. Going over.
Yeah, but that's why we asked the question, is because of the chance that it doesn't go right. I think it's reasonable if he played all the games. I think we know what the answer was.
Reasonable? No, it's a runaway over.
Oh, man. I mean, I think we were talking.
It's more than reasonable.
We'd be talking about closing in on 2,000.
Of course.
Would be the storyline coming out of the bye had he stayed healthy, but that's the butt.
Yep.
And I don't know if you guys saw this. Danny Rossini keeps putting out these, you know, these flickers of optimism. We knew that this was coming. There were going to be some national reporters that put out some hints, you know, that 10 weeks would be January 9th. That would be in time for the regular season finale for Derrick Henry. And that's 10 weeks. And she was hinting that it could be on the lesser side of the 8 to 10 weeks. So can you imagine that? But that's just something to file away.
I wonder how they're going to handle it. You know, how are they going to handle his, because they're going to want this to be a total secret, right? So how do they do this? Are they going to ship him off? Is they just going to have him doing stuff somewhere else?
Well, because you know, there's
they're
an
not going to trot
site.
Him out.
He's going to go to Lipscomb and train with Trent Dilfer in their indoor facility,
which is
going to be flanked
Chase,
by security.
They have an invisible site in Una, somewhere near our station. But it's just off the grid where they have all these guys training, extra kickers, the guys on the taxi squad.
Well, they have the third field, which you're not allowed to look at. Like if you look at the third field, you get tackled.
Right. Yeah.
According to Vrabel.
Don't look over here. Yeah, that will be a good question. Is
right.
When,
he I mean, looked at the third field. Things. They're not going to have him on the third field. They're not going to have him visible. So I do wonder, like, where are they going to have him when he's. Yeah. You know, when he's starting to basically train to come back.
All I can tell you is if he's getting close, I would be loving the fact that I could tell you that he's getting close. But I do think there's going to be as much secrecy as they can.
It's going to be very, very secretive.
All right, question number five.
The only way you'll know is when you get the transaction email that says he has been designated to return, because they have to send that.
Yes. Yeah. So that will start the whole ball rolling.
Yeah.
Question five, we got to race through these. What will the Titans' record be? Very interesting picks. Darren and I each said 11-6. Chase said 12-5. Both are still gettable, and we might all miss depending on what happens here. But I think we are all kind of on the right track there.
I feel good about 11-6. I feel really good about that.
And as we said, 11-6 might get you the one seed if things fall right. Could. You never know.
Could.
I asked the question, will the Titans get 40 or more sacks? Remember, they had 19 last year. So basically, we're saying, could they double it, given the fact that they have an extra game this year? Right now, the Titans have 29 sacks. So they're averaging 2.4 sacks per game as opposed to last year, 1.4. They have 5 games to go. So they're on pace to do this. They're on pace to do this if they can keep up that rate of about 2.5 per week. Darren said, no, they will not get to 40 sacks. Chase and I said, yes, we were optimistic. So we'll see what happens.
It's going to be probably right at it.
It's going to be close.
It's
going to be close.
So you're telling me there's a chance.
There's a chance. Here's another one that we won't know until the very end. Average third down efficiency in the NFL last year was 42%. The Titans, of course, gave away some of the worst third down conversion rates of all time, almost 52%. They were a sieve on D. So the question we asked, because we talked about it all summer long, can they fix this defense? Will the Titans be better or worse than the league average in third down efficiency on defense, stopping the team in third down conversions, which they couldn't do last year? Right now, the league average is 40.1%. The Titans are at 38.7, so they're better than the league average. They actually rank 12th, the 12th best in the league at stopping teams on third down. So our predictions were, all of us said they would be better than the league average.
Yep.
Where was this optimism for Shane Bowen? I don't remember us being that optimistic about him.
I remember exactly what I said. They got pounded the entire offseason about it. It is going to be a point of emphasis, and they've got nowhere to go but up. So it was a pretty easy answer for me. Like,
so unless
you get pounded for months about it, you've just been, just drilled on every talk show in this town. Everything's been written about it. You know, it's going to be a huge point of emphasis. And so it was a pretty easy answer for me.
So that one's tracking well. Unless they get lit up down the stretch, they have a very good chance of staying under the league average. Ryan Tannehill, over or under 28.5 touchdown passes? All of us took the bait and said over. Oh, boy. He needs to have a couple of huge games to get to the over.
That's not happening.
That ain't happening.
Yep, that is not good. Okay, and then the last couple, here's a laughable one. Will Darrington Evans be active for 10 or more games? Okay.
Let me guess.
And then Willie said over, Chase said over, I said under.
Yeah.
And I don't even know, but that's just my guess.
Yes, and this is the bonus. Yeah.
Is that right?
You guys said no.
Is that right?
You guys said no, I said yes.
Oh, I said no? I thought I would have said yes.
Oh, wow.
Proud of me. Okay.
You know what? I can't even read my script. I put D's. I don't know if I put an answer.
I'm sorry.
I forgot to write down the answers.
Oh, well, you.
I put D, C, and W, and then I forgot to write your answers next to the letter on that.
Let me just tell you how
bad
that
penmanship.
Went. I took the under, and you two took the over.
Yeah, probably.
I feel pretty good about that.
And then this was the sidebar, the final one. Will either Caleb Farley or Dylan Raidens be a starter by December? You guys selected Farley, I selected Raidens, and we might all be wrong. Obviously, right now it's December.
Well, we're wrong.
Farley is gone. Yeah. Raidens,
we're wrong.
And then, okay, here's the one I skipped over. This one, the most productive receiver in catches not named Julio Jones or AJ Brown. Darren went with Anthony Firkser. Chase and I went with Josh Reynolds. Okay.
Alrighty.
Very good.
Not on the team.
Yeah.
For all three of us.
Right now, the correct answer would be Nick Westbrook-Ikhine or Jeremy McNichols. They both have 25 catches.
Hmm.
Yep. By the way, I saw where Hugh Jackson.
Anthony Firkser, you still have hope, Darren.
Yeah.
Because Anthony Firkser has 20 catches. If he were to have some big games down the stretch, you could still.
It's at least my guy's still on the roster, so I have a chance. Yeah, you guys don't have a chance. Hugh Jackson has taken the Grambling State job. He is their new head coach. So,
saw that.
And George will be looking for a new OC. All right, we'll come back. You just made the list time. Your calls next.